Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Rick Spezak, and I'm going to have a special guest host tonight, Renee Shaker, and she'll be with us in just a minute. But we've got a real jam-packed show tonight with some wonderful guests, and there's so much information I want to play right away. I want to play an interview with Professor Summer Gentry, and let me bring her right on. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Professor Summer Gentry, who is a TSA activist among her many other fine talents and skills. Welcome, Summer.
Thanks again for having me back.
It's a pleasure. I understand that there's some important things that our audience needs to know about changes with TSA and a chance for some public input. Why don't you tell us about it?
Absolutely. Well, the TSA has finally complied with the order from the D.C. Circuit Court that mandated that they hold a public comment period on their use of body scanners. In fact, the court said it's hard to imagine anything that would impact more greatly on the public than this body scanner program, and so that the TSA had actually acted illegally in implementing the body scanner program without collecting public comment. So nevertheless, 2 years after that order, almost 2 years, the TSA has finally complied, and they released an order in the Federal Register to change the rules surrounding airport screening. And the change that they're making in the rule is entirely contained in these two sentences. So let me read you. This is what they say the rules, how they say the rules are changing. The screening and inspection described in Part A may include the use of advanced imaging technology. For purposes of this section, advanced imaging technology is defined as screening technology used to detect concealed anomalies without requiring physical contact with the individual being screened.
Interesting.
That's it. That's 2 years of work.
That seems like about as narrow a gate as, Gibraltar.
Indeed. I mean, I would say my major problem with this change to the rule is that they describe body scanners as being a technology not requiring physical contact, but we know that body scanners lead to pat-downs. They involve many, many additional pat-downs that would never have happened without the body scanners. And this rule doesn't say a word about pat-downs. So I think that's one of the big gaps that we should be reflecting on as we compile our comments. So the TSA is required to collect these comments. They're all publicly displayed. So that gives me the joy of reading them all, and I'm going to share a few of these great
comments. Oh, please do. Please do.
But first let me, I'll share some of these comments. Still compiling my own comment, which I think will run to many pages. But here are just a couple that I think are really the best. One is from Allison Schauer. She says, I want to voice my opinion against the use of advanced imaging technology as primary screening at airports. I don't think anyone can look at the spectacle of Americans lined up in the surrender position can feel this is any longer the home of the brave. The technology is wrought with false alarms. This is one of the reasons the scanners were not adopted for use in Germany, and constant false alarms lower the effectiveness of security personnel. Many people are unable to use these machines due to physical limitations. The TSA has not proven itself able to handle these people with dignity. I've observed the rate of people going through AIT. It slows the line, with close to half of the people receiving an additional pat-down. Do longer lines reduce risk? Speaking of pat-downs, I always opt out due to my romantic notion of valuing my Fourth Amendment rights. These are not pat-downs. They are a creepy, ritualistic groping. they touch every part of your body, and it left me shaking in tears and angry. I cannot imagine the trauma inflicted on those with a history of abuse. I avoid air travel now. These scanners are a poorly thought-out solution that creates more problems than they solve. But they don't make me feel more secure. They make me feel violated. But more important than how they make me feel, they are not effective for the TSA mission, the detection of weapons, incendiaries, and explosives.
Very good. Very good.
So it's just excellent to see all of these Americans getting online and being able, in a very simple way, to make their point. And the interesting thing about this public comment period is that even though, obviously, anger over the body scanners and over the pat-downs has been everywhere for the last 2 years, these create a record which is litigatable. That is, once these comments are collected, if the TSA ignores them, as we feel confident they will, then the Electronic Privacy Information Center and other groups may be able to bring the TSA back to court and say, you have ignored the public's opinion on this issue.
Well, since they ignored the court for 2 years, I would say it's fairly safe to assume they may not be fully engaged with the public comment. You know, and not to make too fine a scientific point, and I realize that so many Americans seem to be allergic to science, but I would say that being bombarded with high-energy particles is not really contact-free. And while I understand that the common parlance of no immediate danger does conflict with the idea that background radiation is not existing in and of itself. These are cumulative effects. So the more dental x-rays, the more bone scans, the more body scans you have, the impact is in fact cumulative. And as those people who've been paying any attention whatsoever to radioactive health will tell you, there is no safe dosage level. It is not always going to have an impact on your genetics, on your DNA, on the structure, but any particular dose may very well have that impact. And as has been proven recently from research from Chernobyl and also in Fukushima, women and children have a much stronger impact from radiation exposure. And that needs to be mentioned too. But you were also going to make another point. When you started to talk about the, you were going to read some examples. Do you have a couple other examples you want to read?
I have a great example here. This was an anonymous comment, which is unfortunate because I'd love to praise this person for their great comment. It says, all body scanning techniques have a flaw that can't be overcome. They don't detect explosives or metal in guns. They detect objects on body surfaces and only on the visible surface of the body. The result is that the technique cannot differentiate between legal and innocent but private objects on a person's body, such as prosthetics, ostomies, insulin pumps, and maxi pads. This makes all persons the constant target of slow and potentially invasive secondary searches. We've seen many issues with people with disabilities being traumatized by their experiences with the TSA, and the body scanners are a huge part of this issue. There may be some people who actually would prefer to use body scanners, and those would be people of medical metal. They may be less likely to have secondary screening if they go through a body scanner. So I would be okay with the solution of using body scanners and metal detectors and allowing travelers to choose. I think that would be a reasonable solution also. But you know, there are a lot of people just disadvantaged by this focus on, do you have a body that we consider normal or not? And some people are, you know, harassed every single time that they want to fly because their body doesn't meet the TSA's definition of acceptable.
You know, it would seem to me that it doesn't take too much brain power to assume that the average 90-year-old in a wheelchair, the average 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9-year-old is probably not packing. They're probably not full-functioning members of the NRA. And, you know, it seems like we're avoiding intelligence to have maximum exposure. And now I realize how important Mr. Chernoff's profits are, but there's got to be some alternative way of applying, dare I say, intelligence to the problem of security.
Absolutely. So people focus on these when they're searching tiny children or obviously disabled elderly and say, this is ridiculous. How could you suspect that this person is trying to plot against us? But really, that's just an extreme case of the basic American principle that none of us should be presumed to be packing a weapon and presumed to be a terrorist. We should not be treated as terrorists until proven otherwise, but that's precisely what the TSA does. And their technologies and their methods are all fraught with so many false positives that they can't possibly work when applied to a population that has such an incredibly low base rate of anyone wanting to cause trouble on the airplane. This is a based on a mathematical principle called Bayes' rule. If you have a technology, even if it's really good at finding bad guys, but it also occasionally catches good guys, when the underlying rate of bad guys is so incredibly low, then the technique has no value at all. So everything the TSA does has no value as applied to the entire flying public. And the right response to airline terrorism is police work, intelligence work, finding the plots before they get to the airport, because as we've seen, you don't have to go to the airport. So that the right response is police and intelligence to find the plots.
So that we don't lose track of this public input component of our discussion today, is there a date certain that the statements have to be into the TSA by?
Yes, the statements all have to be in by June 24th.
June 24th, okay.
Yes, and there's a website. It's very easy to submit your comment. You can even submit just one sentence saying, I oppose the use of body scanners, period, hit return. You can also submit your comments anonymously or with your name and address attached. Should I give the website for
please,
comments?
Oh, please. Please do.
It's easy. tinyurl.com/TSA/comment. tinyurl.com/TSA comment will get you right to the page where you can put your name or not and enter your comments about the TSA's body scanner program. And this is very, very important. We've had hundreds and hundreds of critical comments submitted. You can go to the website and also read all of those comments.
tinyurl.com/TSA comment.
That's right.
Excellent. Excellent. That's super. Is there anything else new on the TSA front, Professor?
You know, I did have an interesting experience recently. I thought you might like to hear about
it. Sure, go ahead.
I was thrown out of Baltimore Airport for refusing a pat-down after going through a body scanner.
Good God.
I agreed to go through the body scanners, even though I object to them.
Just haven't had enough radiation that day, huh?
These are millimeter wave scanners. There's two different types. And in fact, the TSA is phasing out the type of scanner that has X-ray ionizing radiation, but without any guarantee that they won't come back. Who
sure.
knows?
Sure.
I went through a millimeter wave scanner, and I had yellow boxes on my little gingerbread man outline, one on my breast. And so the TSA said, oh, well, now we have to pat you down. And I said, no, you're not going to touch me there. I don't see why I should have strangers putting their hands on my breast and my nipple to feel what's there. And so they put me back in the body scanner. I asked for a second scan. They put me back in the body scanner, and the second scan was totally clean. So, first of all, it was obviously a false positive. Everyone at the checkpoint knew it was a false positive. But then this woman came screaming at me, telling me she was a TSA inspector and I was trying to
disrupt,
oil their systems, and that I know too much about TSA procedures. And she sort of attacked me. She kept backing me up, getting closer and closer to me, and I said, you're standing too close to me. Give me some space. And she had me backed up until I was wound up in this little tensor barrier, you know, thing that they had caged me in.
Oh, my God.
Finally, the police arrived, and luckily they understood that I had the right to refuse, and they helped me leave the airport unscathed. But not before this woman said to the police officers, she's over there making eyes at you guys, trying to get sympathy. So she threw a little as many attacks as she could. But
incredible.
what I believe is that at least, at the very least, what the TSA ought to do is make clear that we have the right to refuse their procedures. What they are doing is totally unconscionable. They should not be physically assaulting innocent travelers. But at the least, it should be clear to everyone that we have the right to say no. Especially because they haven't told us what they're going to do. They refuse to even describe what a pat-down is.
Right.
So, you know, under those circumstances, to try to intimidate people into going through with screening when they have clearly said they do not intend to allow this kind of thing to happen, is just wrong.
And this, the most transparent administration, has trouble telling us a lot of things. Who and why and how do you get on the no-fly list? Who and hi and wow? How do you get on the let me blow them up, I don't like them list? And, of course, all this without trial.
Can I give you the conclusion to the story, though?
Oh, please.
I changed my flight from the 7:15 to the 9:30, came back, went through a metal detector, got on my plane. There's always another plane, but, you know, standing up for your rights is priceless.
Absolutely, positively. Thank you so much, Professor. That was really very useful information. Why don't you give that web address one more time?
Sure. It's tinyurl.com/TSA comment.
Well, thank you again, and I hope to talk to you soon when you've got even more good news about the phasing out of these abusive systems with the TSA. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I hope that you and lots of your listeners will be able to go to the website and comment.
Well, I'm going to insist. Thanks again. Take care.
Bye-bye.
So don't forget, tinyurl.com/TSA comments. And now I'd like to turn the show over to my good and able colleague, Ms. Renee Shaker. Renee, welcome.
Thank you, Rick. Pretty scary stuff. I have a tiny dog that I travel with, and do you know that I have to have my hands wiped for bomb residue? So anybody who thinks that I would be packing a 10-pound miniature dachshund with explosives has got a pretty warped mindset to begin with. Anyhow, thanks for having me, Rick. Poor Rick, everybody, he's down with a bad cold. It's sort of in that category, no good deed goes unpunished. He works with children and teaching them computers, and I suspect a little bugger passed on a bug. But anyhow, we've got a pretty full show, and I just want to quickly let you know that we've got Luis Cuevas from Progressive Push, Susan Nylon from the Nylon Report, Brian Stetton from Progress Toward Democracy, Gwen Holden Berry from There Be Monsters, Harriet Lehrman, the voice of the people, and Sita Bagwai from Sita Media. So let's get right into it. Louis, are you there? Can you tell us what you're working on?
Yes. Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Right now, one of the things that we're looking at is very connected. Number one is the issue of the climate change and the inability of our country and many other developed countries to tackle the issue and move forward. The other one is the issue of the Gulf of Mexico and the way that we seem to be 3 years after the disaster of BP that not much has changed. And so we're working in the direction of trying to make changes that way. And unfortunately, it seems that nothing is going to stop in terms of the oil industry, these people, from continuing to do more damage. Recently, there has been a great leak in Arkansas, and well, everybody thinks, well, that's contained in Arkansas. It isn't so, because it's beginning to go into the Arkansas River, and from the Arkansas River, you reach the Mississippi, and then you go into the Gulf of Mexico.
Sure, and from there, the rest of the world and the ecosystem in those areas.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about the climate change issue. I mean, the other stuff I want to get to, but climate change, I'm sure, is high on everybody's list of priorities.
Yes. Essentially, what we're looking at is that, you know, for years now, this has been looked into and worked into, and we have tremendous amounts of money been put into the media by climate deniers, as they are called.
The Koch brothers.
Yes, the Koch brothers enter the politicians who take their money, and from there on it goes into the corporate media that likes their advertising and takes their money, and they all conjure this picture as if it's really not that bad. You see, it's just like the sequester. It's not happening yet. You see the snowball getting larger and larger as it's coming down the hill. But all these people are saying, no, it's not happening. And here we are looking at the weather maps of the world on a daily basis. And we're looking at all the currents and what is happening. And it's undeniable that wherever it's cold, it's going to get colder. Wherever it's hot, it's going to get hotter. But if you get, you know, the drift of the deniers, they will tell you, well, there is snow. They cannot be warming.
Well, you know, I don't think that there's a person out there who doesn't look at what's going on in this very strange weather we're having and acknowledge that this is real. It seems like our politicians are the only ones who can't seem to acknowledge the obvious.
Yeah, but, you know, it comes back to one question. Where are they breeding these people that we get to run for Congress? Where do they come from? I mean, these are individuals who have degrees from colleges and universities in the United States. How do they get those?
Yeah.
Then again, we remember George Bush had degrees, right?
You know? Yeah, and look what good that did.
Exactly. And so we have taken to call it a progressive push. We call it the revenge of the village idiots.
Uh-huh.
They're rising and they're coming over. And you see, it just happens that people look down on them and say, well, you know, you're a bunch of idiots. And now they're saying, oh, yeah, but we're cunning and we're coming to power.
Yeah.
And what we're telling people is, listen, and it goes back to, all the way back to Socrates, and when he says, you know, the price for smart people staying out of politics is to be ruled by fools. Paraphrasing.
Amen.
Yeah, and that's what's happening. You know, the good people have abstained from getting into politics for years, and now we're getting all these throngs of idiots, to put it mildly, coming up, getting into office, holding office. And there's no other explanation for it. And now they're trying to ruin everything for everybody. And when it comes to climate change, it's deadly. You know, years ago, I came across with a speeding email coming by my for somebody. I won't reveal the source, but I can't. But it simply says, and it's well known by now, but it was a Pentagon report saying that the climate change, global warming, was a tremendous threat to international security, to the United States, because there would be massive disruptions of all the systems, economic, not only just the food system, the temperatures and all that, but it would be causing migrations, tremendous migrations, destabilized governments, and so on.
Right. Lewis, we only have about a minute left. Tell us real quick what happened in Arkansas a potential danger for us right now?
Well, what happened there is it was one of these pipes, and then it goes the same thing as the Keystone pipe will happen, is that it tore, and it leaked thousands of gallons of oil into a neighborhood. Immediately, Exxon came in and tried to supposedly contain it. But they exercised a tremendous amount of power over the community. They got the government to give them a no-fly zone over the entire area, and they got authorities to block out any information coming from the region.
Oh, dear.
And so what we know is what they will let the rest of us know.
So basically,
just like
they're
BP.
Controlling the message.
Exactly, just like they did with BP. Exactly the same routine.
Right. So, and the Gulf, your comment earlier about there hasn't been any change in the 3 years.
Right.
Tell us what your work has uncovered there recently.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that we're seeing continuous reports of dolphins dying, abnormalities among the shrimp and fish. You can't throw in millions of gallons of toxic material that was forbidden in England. The British forbade BP and other oil companies from using these toxic materials to be used to clean up oil spills, and they used them in the Gulf. And while the residue from the oil is 3-4 inches under the sand around the Gulf.
Of course,
and
out of
we don't
sight,
know
out
about
of
this
mind.
Other... I'm sorry,
out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. And, of course, then you have the Chamber of Commerce who comes in and says, nothing happened here. You see, don't have sharks around Florida, and no, we don't have oil in the water.
What's the local business community doing about all this? You know, it's such a... fishing is such a huge industry...
Right.
I'm sure that they're got to be up in arms about this.
They are concerned, except the fact that right now there is a struggle between the corporate fishing machines and the small fishermen, and it is the local guys who are suffering. It's the family business that has been doing this for years that are suffering. In the meantime, big fishing companies are just just going around, and as usual, nothing has happened. I will not eat anything from the Gulf.
Well, I've heard that too. It's not just the Gulf. I mean, our waters everywhere are contaminated.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. But let me come back. The local fishing community, you know, the mom and pop outfits,
right?
Have they banded together? Are they working together to address any of this? Are their voices being heard at all?
Well, they're struggling to get some money back, so it's not as if they really can do much there in terms of organizing. There's been, it's always comes back to the politicals and how they want to handle the situation. And in this whole coast of the Gulf, all the way, to Louisiana, big oil rules. Mm-hmm. So there's not much resistance to that. The minute any resistance comes up, they say, then the oil companies are going to stop employing people. We can't do that. And then the hotels and travel industry comes with the Chamber of Commerce and says, no, you guys, you just better calm down and
everything's fine.
Down.
Come on down to the beach.
Exactly.
And have your vacation.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've all seen those. We see those ads on television.
Right, exactly. And sometimes you get in the background, and our team gets together and we talk about this, and it's almost like hearing the music of deliverance right behind you. It just like Worry about saying anything, and you're going to get it.
So, Louis, let me ask you this. Is there anything in the current legislative session about to end? You know, is there anything being done here?
No, they're talking about suing BP. And much of it comes from the Attorney General of the state, whom I think has some intention of challenging Scott for the governorship. There's some rumblings there. But all this has to, you know, the right now the legislature and the governor are at odds with each other. But oftentimes you have to look at it, whether it's a pitcher and catcher little game, bad cops, good cops, to get what they want. And so you can't trust any of them.
So is there anything our listeners can do? I mean, specific actions, any particular people to write to or email?
They should. I think that they should be on top of things. Just pay attention to everything that's being done. Look at everything that the media is putting out there. Challenge the media. That's the most important thing, because they are the ones who are making a difference in terms of what they're putting out there. Then go out to their legislators, and if they don't have a decent legislator who represents them, go to the next county, to the next area that they can get one. If not, eventually write to people like Alan Grayson and send them the message. Send us notes at progressivepush.org. It's info@progressivepush.org. And we will get it to the appropriate people if they have worries, concerns. And we also have friends of allies of ours at progressflorida.org, and they can also reach them there.
Okay,
so there are people in the state.
That's
working.
Great. That's great. really appreciate it. Good stuff, Louis. Good work you're doing. And you know, stand by. We might want to come back to this. But I want to ask, is Susan, are you with us? Susan Nylon? Okay.
We have a guest at 754-217.
Hello, this is Brian Stetton.
Ah, Brian,
hi.
Welcome.
Hey, guys, how are you doing tonight?
Good. Brian, thank you so much. We're going to go right to you, and why don't you give us an update on what you're working on and what our audience needs to know about this evening.
Well, me and another good friend, Ruth Ann Amartifi, who have been for a while doing the show, Progress Toward Democracy. Basically, the underlying theme is that we need to question more than just the political system, because the politics simply don't function. That we're primarily a business-run society where basic human needs and basic human rights are of little concern compared to the need for profits by an investor class. And that's shown through most major political decisions. There was a recent study done in which they broke down by income distribution, looking at what the needs and wants of the average person based on where they fall in terms of low class, middle class, higher class, and so forth, and heavily polled, versus the voting decisions by Congress. And basically the bottom third aren't represented at all, middle third sometimes. And as you get higher in the income scale, you pretty much get what you want. Matter of fact, that was most recently shown with the decision on Friday that was regarding the sequestration. Right? Sequestration has been, you know, cuts layered across the economy. For example, government programs that fund cancer treatments have been cut back, and so some people have been literally sentenced to their death. You have some X-ray, not X-ray treatment, but certain types of radiation therapy treatment centers of cancer being shut down because government funding has been cut. Meals for Wheels is facing a cut that'll hurt the elderly. There also have been cuts to the FAA, meaning fewer air traffic controllers, and that was causing an inconvenience and longer wait times at airports for those in the higher business class. And Congress rapidly pushed a bill through, signed off by Obama, to change that. So, I mean, the wealthy pretty much get what they want, and everybody else sort of suffers, while there's serious talk of possibly cutting Social Security, which when you poll people across the average, America doesn't want, except for the top 1%, because they don't need it, and they feel they shouldn't have to pay for anything.
Sure,
so
yeah.
Our society,
I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
No, I was just agreeing with you. We are run by the corporate titans and the bankers and the ultra-wealthy, but ultimately the only voice any of us has is with our politicians, who have been co-opted by this group of people. How do we change that? I mean, do we, is it a constitutional amendment to take money out of campaign finance? What would our options are going forward?
Well, I think it runs deeper than that. And unfortunately, this country isn't like it was decades ago when there were fairly sizable movements that question and push back against capitalism. They don't exist anymore. And those were part of labor movements. This country has an extremely violent labor history. All the way up until the 1930s, labor leaders would get butchered for daring to try to organize people wanting higher pay. Matter of fact, people got killed just trying to get us the 8-hour workday.
Sure, I remember studying all that in college, and
So I mean, the unions have been disappearing. So we don't have a strong left movement that wants to push back against capitalism, wants to question capitalism, and so everyone's thinking simple reformists. Well, perhaps there's some laws we can push through, or something to try to, quote unquote, keep the money out of politics. But you can't really do that. Because whenever you have a class of elites, money finds a way to get into the system. I mean, capitalism inherently is non-democratic. You have a concentration of wealth among a small group of people. And as soon as you have a concentration of wealth, that wealth is translatable to political power. You can simply buy politicians. That does the trick. So either through campaign financing or lobbyists that promise exotic jobs after they decide not to run anymore for office and so forth. Yeah, it's fairly easy. And there have been changes made to lobbying rules and so forth, but those rules seem to be broken and so forth. One time we interviewed Jack Abramoff, which was, I'm far radical left on the opposite ends of the spectrum than him. Jack Abramoff now is doing a radio show after Glenn Beck on Sundays, trying to sort of imitate him or something. But the guy is by nature a free market conservative. His ideology hasn't changed. But he was one that was caught in a disgrace, a big lobbyist.
Sure.
But when you look at the what he worked with, I mean, casinos and so forth, I mean, he wasn't as harmful to our system as, say, the lobbyist for Big Pharma, which basically had Congress draft up a law so that it, basically, by law, our government cannot negotiate as a whole for lower drug prices like Canada can.
Right, was written into the new prescription drug plan that was passed under Bush, wasn't it?
Yes, correct. Correct. Yeah. So basically, those lobbyists are more powerful than Jack and so forth. He gave very clear explanations that, they try to change laws, or you can't, buy dinners or something for a congressman, or no gifts over a certain size, but they find other ways around them. you know, or I'm helping this congressman do a fundraiser, and they create this artificial fundraiser in which the lobbyist writes a check, hands it over to a middle person who then hands it to the politician or something like that. So, I mean, it's just, there's the money always seems to find a way. And
yeah,
certain
it does.
Industries which have a very strong profit motive shouldn't have a strong profit motive regarding our health, for example. It shouldn't be a matter of bucks whether you live healthy or die.
Absolutely.
You know, or our energy policy. I overheard some talk about climate change. I mean, this is an extremely serious issue that we have to do something urgently about. I think if we don't have major changes within the next decade, possibly it could be the end of our species in 1 to 2 generations, perhaps sooner. You know, it's what's talked about among climate change is a third of the climate scientists believe that, you know, the rest of the 97% of the climate scientists that say it's a real issue are being too conservative, that the situation is even bleaker, you know, than is talked about.
Yeah. Well, you know, we do have precedent for this in our history with money running politics, our politicians and corporations getting their way. And it took somebody like Teddy Roosevelt to finally get this country turned around. But I want you to hold that thought, Brian, because
mm-hmm.
We do want to come back and maybe pick this up during our roundtable. I want to bring on now Gwen Holden Berry from There Be Monsters. Gwen, are you with us?
I'm with you. It's actually Here Be Monsters, not There Be Monsters.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay,
that's
I got
right.
a typo in my program here. Well, tell us what you're working on and what our audience should know about this evening.
Well, I think it's really important just to focus on something very special that I'm working on. In a way, Brian is working on it also. His show, Progress Towards Democracy, is on Era Martifio with Rosanna Martifio, and she's one of the founding members of a network we are putting together of small voices, small radio, so that we have an anchor somewhere where people can come and find us in a collective. We're trying to get Rick there, too. It's called the Commons Project Network. And it has the Authority Smashers and shows that are popular in certain, you know, groups like Pinko the Bear. He does a wonderful, wonderful show. There's our group. There's the Era Martifio shows, including Progress Towards Democracy. And then a World of Progressive Radio or AWOP Radio. Also, Round 37, we also bring in all sorts of indie media. There's Worldwide Hippies, their video broadcasts, and their blogging. And there's Round 37 that does the same thing. So what we're doing is we're creating an anchor base for small voices that we're also providing them with support and technical advice and mentoring to help them get started in bringing their voice to the public, because it's independent and alternative radio and media that is bringing more truth to the social, you know, knowledge than we're getting from any other source. So that's what I'm up to, Liz.
Well, that's good stuff, Gwen. You know, coming back to Brian's comment about, you know, a country being run by corporate America, I'm sure all of us are old enough to know what happened to radio just in the music field, and how, you know, independent radio and the music industry got co-opted by big corporations, and it's really going to, you know, take a return of the little voice to get things changing here again.
That's what we're hoping to provide, and we're also but we're building a huge resource network. In other words, cached videos and instructional guides and technical support to help folks get started in the same thing we're doing.
Where can people go to get information on tapping into these resources?
It's called the Commons Project Network, and it's at .com. You can find us online, and you can find us on Facebook, too.
The Commons Project?
The Commons, C-O-M-M-O-N-S.
Commons Project.
The Commons Project Network. Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. The Commons Project Network.org or .com?
.com.
.com. Okay. So anybody who's interested in starting up their own voice, their own radio show, can go to your websites and get information on how to get going?
They can, and they can also contact us. We're also on Facebook, very accessible. There's a page, and people can come and leave their comments, the Commons Project Network, or just find myself, Gwendolyn Holden Berry, or even Brian Stetton can steer them to that direction.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a very useful information, and I think very important, because it's the only way. We've got to start somewhere, and this sounds like a really good alternative. We're going to move on right now. Susan is with us finally. Susan, welcome.
Hi, and my apologies for being a little late. I had a small kitchen fire I had to attend to.
Oh, no. Well, I hope it didn't turn into something disastrous.
Just not a very good dinner, but other than that, we're fine.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Susan, now you run the Nylon Report. Tell us what you're up to.
Currently, we're following local elections. We have a very big city election that's coming up in 2 weeks. And it's rather unusual. Sarasota demographics are mostly Republican and very conservative, except in the county, with the exception of the city. And in the city of Sarasota, the Democrats actually outnumber the Republicans. So it's a kind of twist of events for us here. And what makes it even more unusual is that our city elections are nonpartisan. However, we have two Democratic women and one Republican male that has made it to the runoff. And what's been happening here is where normally in a nonpartisan election, you don't announce your party association. The local Republican Party came out very early on and announced who the Republicans were, and then said not only do we announce who they were, because originally there were three Republican men that were running and three Democratic women. And that was in the initial election. So they came out very early and said, these are the three men, and we suggest you vote two because there are two seats that are open. And then since then, only one Republican male has survived to the runoff. But what's happening this time around is very interesting, because the incumbent is a Democratic female, and she has chosen to distance herself from the Democratic Party and has been labeling herself a centrist. And she has also paired herself with the Republican mayor, implying that the two of them would make a really good team for the future. And so what's happening now in Sarasota is that it's actually divided the Republican Party. The Democratic Party. Whereas normally you would automatically think, well, there are two seats available, there are two Democratic women, it's a no-brainer for the vote. But it has become such a nasty race that the Democrats are now talking about bullet voting, which means they're only going to vote for one candidate as opposed to two, in hopes that to guarantee that their pick candidate will get in.
So they don't split the votes.
So, well, they're looking to split the – yeah, they're looking to – they don't want – they're upset that the team that has been formed between the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate, and so therefore the other candidate that's kind of left out is a female progressive. And so it seems that the wording that's going around town is that just vote for her and let the cards fall where they may at the other two candidates. Now, some Democrats are saying it's still not worth having the Republican in there because he's so opposite of their main focus candidate that they're willing to vote for the two female Democrats. But they're infuriated with her. In addition to what's happened here in I don't know if in the history of Sarasota it's ever come out, but there are over, I think it's up to now, 15 former mayors of Sarasota have all endorsed the progressive female candidate, and they haven't done the incumbent Democratic candidate, and obviously they're not voting for the Republican as well. And so that it's just been an amazing race that essentially nobody is paying attention to except for the super voters, because in a city that has 35,000 registered voters, there were only a little over 6,000 votes that were cast in the initial election, and probably a lot less in the runoff.
Wow.
Yeah.
that's pretty discouraging.
It is very discouraging because where you would think this was a clean sweep, it's not. So we have a lot of people calling the incumbent, a dino, and saying that she's never shown, any of her Democratic ways. In fact, they're now accusing her of becoming a Democrat before she was initially elected, just to get elected. And then once she was elected, they're saying that she has never been true to her platform.
I see. So now I want to switch topics for just a moment here. You had been working with the pollution activist. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting my program mixed up here.
That's okay.
Actually, I meant to bring that up with another one. Let's come back to what your group is doing, Susan, specifically in this Sarasota race, and anything that would be important for our audience to know about.
We're not doing anything but other than just keeping people informed. What I think it's important to know about is the actual election itself and how we can lose sight and lose focus. And now, instead of feeling that we're actually gaining traction on the issues, we get so caught up in the personal infighting that we've lost sight of the bigger picture. And also, I think it's a question of vetting the candidates and having a better understanding that just because somebody labels themselves, a Democrat, Republican, or progressive or whatever, you just can't assume that's the way it is.
Sure. It's the issues that matter and where they're going to vote on the issues and what their positions are. Your point is very well taken. All right, Susan, I'm going to ask you to hang on. Maybe we can come back to this in the round table. I want to bring up Sita is next. Sita Begui, am I saying
Begui.
That correct? Begui.
Yes.
How are you?
Hi. I'm just listening to the conversation, and I think everything centers around one thing, good, great woman running for office.
Amen.
Well, I'm Sita Begui, and I am the author of a memoir that I wrote called 18 Brothers and Sisters, and I'm also a radio host here in Brevard County. I have my own program called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and I'm joining you tonight. I was asked to talk about an issue that's near and dear to me. Am I correct?
Sorry?
I was asked to talk about an issue that...
Oh, yes, yes, sorry.
Yes.
You dropped out there for a second. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Whatever is near and dear to your heart today.
Yeah, I thought I would just throw it out there to the panel. My issue tonight is centered around women and why I believe good women should run for office, because I feel there's so much domestic violence against women all over the world, and I feel like this issue ties right into immigration and also affects women who are undocumented, and obviously that's a hot topic right now.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like, you know, knowing that right now in the world, one in every three women are beaten or coerced into sex or abused, I feel the only way to help these women is through education. And what else is a better way than women running for office, not just here in the United States, but all over the world? So that's the topic that I chose for tonight to talk about, you know, and discrimination and gender bias and all that.
It is. It's an important topic, particularly since, you know, when you go back and you take some of the comments that have been made by others and how it's become a corporatized world for us. And in that extreme right agenda has been basically a decimation of women's rights. And the only way we're going to be able to protect rights of women, much less advance them, is by getting more women involved in the political process. Are there candidates out there that you have your eye on?
Like most people, I'm hoping that Hillary Clinton does run. I think she'd be a great president. I also feel like in South Carolina, Elizabeth Bush is going to be a great governor as well. But, you know, when the Republicans talk about being pro-life, I wish they would, you know, take into consideration it's not just the life of the unborn, but all lives. Women who are undocumented, you know, they're exploited, they're sexually abused, they can't speak because of fear, and it causes a domino effect with the economy, their children, their education. So I'm hoping that we can get candidates that, you know, people are not just going to stand on a soapbox and say, well, I support immigration. There's obvious reasons why we all need to think about things like that.
Right.
And
yeah,
especially when you hear about Indian, and my background is from India, you hear about the rape of people in India, a five-year-old, a woman on a bus, a woman for dressing, wearing shorts and a T-shirt. And, you know, it really, really gets to my heart that those of us that are blessed to have a voice and a responsible voice, we ought to use it in a very great way to help others.
That's very important because it goes just beyond women's issues pertaining specifically to women and women's rights, but it affects the family and it affects the future generation, you know, who someday will be our leaders.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, when you watch the news reports and you see all these things happening all over the world, you come to a conclusion that in some societies, violence is accepted as, you know, for as masculinity. And it bothers me because I feel like men and boys have to be raised in a culture that they do respect women and girls. And I'm very fearful that it's not happening in a lot of places. And, again, I think it's a lack of education. And, you know, my solution is how to get great women to run and have a voice, not just in the voting process, but in the process to make decisions for countries and nations and trades and everything else that goes with having a wholesome person.
Sure. So, well, let me ask you specifically about Nan Rich here in Florida. Have you been following this? Do you think that she's got a reasonable shot at the governorship here?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I met her quite a few times. I like her very much. Actually, she's going to be calling in on my radio show in a couple of weeks. She really cares about women's issues, and she I know she was a supporter of the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment for Women, and she really lent her voice in Tallahassee with a lot of stuff that was going on there when she was there. I've heard her speak, and I think she's a good shot.
Well, we can hope. We can hope because it's certainly, you know, it starts here at home, as you said, and in Florida. We hopefully have a good opportunity to, you know, put that theory to the test.
Well, you know, it's all about the money. I mean, even here in our town, I ran for a school board in 2008, and I have to tell you, it's grueling work. It's a lot of work to run for office. I mean, you people that you think were going to support you don't. You're in it pretty much night and day. And at the end of the day, it's the money that you collect that helps you to get elected. And it's so sad because great candidates want to run for office, and they don't have the corporate backing behind them. So I would say, how do we get women to run who don't have that much money, but who knows to go out and speak, and who can go out and touch people and tell them, I understand that you're pro-life. I want to protect life as well. But I want to do it in such a way that we think about people when they're born, when they're unborn. What are we going to do for them? How can we help them to become good citizens and members of society? So we have to have good messaging, I think. Us Democrats sometimes, you know, we just have to have our messages and have it, you know, more like in the middle, not too much leaning to the left, too much going over to the right. I think sometimes our messaging gets lost.
It does, and I think that a lot of times us on the left, we're guilty of assuming that everybody sees the benefits of what we're trying to do without really staking out what those benefits are. We can't rely on the self-evident nature of our positions, and we need to get out there and push the message more strongly and with more clarity as well.
Well, I was asked once why I started my radio show, and I said because I live in a highly populated Republican neighborhood, and I would meet a lot of friends at various parties and at a clubhouse and stuff, and I wanted to show people that Democrats do love the United States. We do work. We pay taxes. We love God. We just, our messaging sometimes gets lost. We're not all tax and spend liberals, and I want to show people that we do have businesses. We're nurses, we're doctors, we're lawyers. We own stocks and companies as well. But don't label us only as tax and spend liberals because, you know, we're fiscally responsible. We just have a social heart. I should say.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent, excellent point because, you know, liberals, even in this day and age, we still get labeled with the tax and spend accusations, and that's simply not true, at least
not
in this environment.
I think all of us who have friends who are running for office we're thinking of doing it ourselves. It's a message that we have to get out, that we wake up every day, get dressed, and go to work. We love this country enough to pay our taxes, and we want firemen and police and good teachers, good infrastructure and all that. So we have to tell people, you know, this is who we are, because we get lost so many times in voter fraud and people labeling the people as welfare moms and anchor babies, and they use all these code names, and it makes us look bad when we don't go out and say, you know what, you're wrong.
Yes.
That's not so. So that's my platform, actually. I feel like I found my voice with my radio show, and I'm having people who are running for office, business owners, people who want to sell a product, people who are writing a book. Whatever someone is doing to help the community and get information out there and educate people, they're welcome on my show, and a lot of them help to, you know, help pay for the airtime and things like that. But I am one Democrat that I could say I'm fiscally responsible, but I have a very social, progressive heart. And I will stand up for those that can't stand up for themselves.
Well, we applaud your great work, Sita, and your comments are very appropriate and very on target. We have to take a break. We have a sponsor now, Legal Shield.
Okay.
Rick, you want to, but stay on, stay on hand. We're going to come back and.
What is Legal Shield? It's total access. It's total freedom. Everyone deserves legal protection. And now with Legal Shield, everyone can access it. No matter how traumatic, no matter how trivial, whatever your situation is, we are there to help. From real estate to divorce advice, identity theft and beyond, we have your rights covered. With Legal Shield, you'll be able to talk to a dedicated, experienced attorney about whatever you want, as often as you want, for less than $20 a month. So no matter what happens, you're protected and empowered to worry less and live more. visit www.cpdavisdarrell.legalshield.com. That's www.cpdavisdarrell.legalshield.com. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, welcome back, everybody. We're going to turn to our roundtable discussion, and I want to bring back a question that I asked a moment ago. And do any of you have any thoughts on Nan Rich as our possible next governor of Florida?
Hello.
Any thoughts?
This is Sita. Hoping that she can get her message out, and I'm hoping that she can get elected. Of course, I think there's going to be other candidates as well, but I'm one of those, I kind of wait till after the primary is over to see what's going to happen, because we're not sure who's running yet.
It is early, but I think that this is going to come on us a lot quicker than we realize, and it's important to be prepared. Did anybody else have any comments on Nan?
Well, I don't think there's not enough due diligence out there. I haven't seen enough on her voting record, and that's my bad. Maybe somebody should have her on. Is anyone got her slated as a guest?
I can bring that up with Rick, see if maybe we can't line up a show where we can explore the issue with Nan herself and maybe some others as well.
I know she's a big proponent of Medicaid expansion, which is vitally important here in Florida. So that's a good thing.
Yes, and she was the Senate Minority Leader, so she has a lot of experience with working across the aisle, which is so important right now. It's only through cooperation that anything's going to get done. And it's also uniparty under corporations that it's only a person's personal, I don't trust party affiliations much. I trust the demonstration of the candidate themselves.
Yeah.
This is Susan, and I would say her biggest problem right now is actually the Democratic Party. They have not really shown her the love that you would think they would have by now, because she announced very early on. And I think another hurdle of hers is the thought that Charlie Crist might run as well. And so,
and he's pretty popular.
He is. I think he's going to do more harm to the party than he would actually to unify it. And I think he'll at the very least split the vote. But that seems to be in the direction that the leadership of the state is heading. But from what I've seen, they pretty much have ignored Nan.
Is that because this is just the radical side of me asking the question, which I have no idea could be true or not. Susan, you'll have a better grasp of it, or Sita will have a better grasp of it, but could it be because Mr. Chris now, as a Democrat, has more of a corporate measure about him than Ms. Rich might have? Because
it's always about the money. It always is. It's sad because, with Nan Rich, talking about Medicaid expansion and how much she supports a healthy Florida and, 1 million Floridians and all that are going to be covered, it's sad because everybody knows they want to be healthy. That should be like the number one concern, but it's not. It always comes down to which candidate has the most money to run the ads and get his message out there.
Well, and I can tell you, John Morgan from Morgan & Morgan is, where Charlie is working right now. And he's a major fundraiser, not only for, him, Charlie, but for the party itself. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I think, though, that the voters, whether they have a short memory or not, will make a difference. You know, his 4 years, he should have stayed and run as governor for a second term. He didn't. He asked his right-hand man, Charles Lemieux, to hold the seat open for him. He went ahead and ran for Senate, left it open for Rick Scott. He also then flipped parties and went from being a Republican to an independent and basically cost us, you know, a lot of what we're dealing with now with our current governor. So, you know, while you're right, he has a lot of money, we've, you know, proven from time and time again, the Republicans had a lot of money here too, and they are seem to have to run our state, and yet we still elected Barack Obama in for a second term, regardless of what was said. So I think it's going to be a really interesting race. And I also think, too, that Rick Scott is going to be primaried, and that'll make a difference as well as whether someone like Dan Rich can stay the course amongst all the typical candidates.
Well, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you go.
I was going to say that it seems as though Charlie Crist, you know, with the education people, with all the teachers and administrators and stuff, he seems to have a great following with education.
Yeah.
The teachers, some teachers, from what I've heard, love him. And, you know, he made some decisions that affected them. So it's kind of like a mixed bag. It's very complex because you've got a lot of Republicans that like him for corporate reasons, and then you have some Democrats that like him for education and different things that he stood up for. So it is going to be an interesting race, I have to say.
Lewis, let me ask you. Well, first of all, do you have a comment on Dan Rich and the upcoming race? And I also wanted to ask you if you were surprised that Nelson said no to a run for the governorship.
Okay, it's interesting because on the issue of Nan Rich, she's come up and her name was put up there, but looking at 2014, it's getting quite a bit late for anybody to pop up so much money for that race. When looking at it from the practical, political angle of it, not the emotional angle, you've got to have a political machine set up by now. It doesn't appear that she has. I know she's been moving around, but one of the most important things in political races is name recognition. And you've got to be up there every single day when you decide that you want to run for office in the governorship. That said, she's got strong rivals to go against. You still have back there, yes, Crist, but you also have the problematic of hearing from the last challenger to the governorship in the state of Florida, and you know whether she's going to throw her name in or not, and it might be difficult for her being a widow now and having gone through difficult times that Alex Sink is going to run, but her name is there, and when we talk about Alex Sink or Chris, together they will devour any money that is available out there. And that is a killer for a candidate. The other one thing that I would like to say, you know, regarding this, is that, and I heard the name of Hillary being thrown in, you know, for the next election and so on, that we need to focus on local candidates. That's the problem that we have in the Democratic Party, that we don't see a strategy, or the other parties, but essentially is that everybody wants to go for the prime time jobs, but we need to fill in all the positions from the dog catcher the school board, the city council, the county commission, you know, every which step, because those are the backbone positions that sustain further or higher up political positions in the state. And unless the progressives and liberals begin to tackle that and deal with that, you're not going to see any change. Republicans, long time ago, went for it. They've been doing that. It's like, you know, it was hitting the Democrats at the kneecaps and building up there. And so what they did was that they took out from under the Democrats all the base, and these people then higher up don't have any support. You know, a congressperson, if he doesn't have all these people on the county commissions, in the school boards, and everywhere else, not going to get any much help. And that is what is happening.
Your point is very important, Lewis. I mean, you can look at the Roe playbook back in the 90s and at the turn of the century. You know, the Republican stronghold that they have in Congress wasn't a fluke. You know, they worked at this meticulously, targeting everything down to, you know, the state legislators, the local county commissioners, the, you know, even the judgeships in various states. And they built and they built and they built. And now, and of course, that put them in a beautiful position to control the redistricting, which allows them to keep power.
Exactly. And that's what's been happening, and we're still to see, in the case of Florida, the Florida Democratic Party doing anything about that. We work elections at Progressive Push, and I perfectly understand what Susan has said. Susan is very correct in her assessment in terms of when we look at all these situations about the local races. And when a progressive comes up, and then we see the not-so-progressives trying to block them in, and we call them blue dogs or dinos, Democrats in name only. And the reason they call themselves blue dogs is because they thought that liberals were suffocating them within the Democratic Party with civil rights laws. And so on, a while back ago. And the history of the Blue Dogs is that it used to be known as Dixiecrats, and before that they were known as the Boll Weevils. So they used to be the Southern Democrats who had kept control even before the Civil War. And so, you know, things change. But when progressives come up, they are attacked as, you know, being wackos. And so there is this push to say, oh, we move towards the right with them. And, you know, progressives are saying consistently, and Ted Kennedy put it out very bluntly years ago when he said, this country already has one Republican Party. We don't need two. So that the Democrats have to stand by their platforms. What is the purpose of doing it? And when progressives are moving up and they're writing all these platforms and they're getting, you know, making their dash at every single level, they're not getting support.
Lewis, this is Sita. I just wanted to jump in here and just say something. You know, when we were working the elections here in Brevard County, we knocked on doors, we phone banked. We gave money to the Democrats. We did everything possible to get good Democrats elected to the school board, like you said, the county commission, state rep seats. And what we found was, it always comes back to women and this pro-life, pro-choice thing. We would call people, and they would hang up just because they say all Democrats are pro-choice. But I think unless we can get more Democrats to go to church, start talking to people about the issues, not just who's born and who's dying and who's sick, but What about education? What about infrastructure? What about who's cleaning your home? Does that person have health insurance? What about the nurse and the nurse's aide who's taking care of you in the hospital? I think us Democrats have to take our message and our intellect in a different way, because all you hear here in Brevard County, I was running for a school board seat, and I have to tell you, so many people asked me what I thought about life. And I said to them, I want every life to have an education, to have a good life if they're born. But people, it seems to be, unless we can get through to people that women having a choice, women having a decision about their bodies and what they want to do with their pregnancies between them and their God and their doctor, unless we can get that to some people that it's none of our business, unfortunately, they hung the phone up. They don't even want to hear what you have to say about education and the rest of the stuff, because some people are just stuck on that one point.
Understood.
The majority of people are stuck on that point of
I think so.
Pro-choice. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is, unless we conform to more conservative ideals, then we're not going to be able to win the constituency.
Well, not
yeah?
conservative per se, but more of an education base. Instead of saying that, you know, when they ask you a question, you say, well, I believe in education. I believe in birth control. I believe in a woman making responsible choices
okay.
with their body.
You know, can I interrupt as well? Because I'm hearing some things that I'm actually a little disturbed about. The
uh-huh.
comment that we have to become more involved in the church and start
yeah.
expanding our education. I don't think that's true. I mean, if you want to change the message about pro-choice, then your message shouldn't be, oh, I disagree with abortion as well. Your message should be, I want smaller government too. I want the government out of my bedroom. I want the government out of my gynecological office. I want the
yeah.
government out of my hospital room. That's what the message
yeah.
should be, because that's on the
yeah.
same par that they're saying, we want a smaller government too. Of course, what they're not telling you is it's not true. They don't.
But they have this idea
government.
That we don't believe in anything other than what we believe in. And I hear it all the time. People will say, well, you don't, guys don't believe in God. You don't believe. And I happen
so
to
what?
Be a very spiritual
you
person.
Also,
but,
yeah,
you know, but I'm not a Christian, but I'm spiritual. And I feel like sometimes we get labeled as a lot of things. You know, we don't love God, we don't love country, we don't love children, we don't love babies. And I'm saying that you've got to reach them at a level, even if it means talking to people. Just talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, talk to them in your synagogues or churches or wherever you go to worship. You don't necessarily have to start going to church. But I'm just saying that I find personally that I reached a lot of people for this past elections by just talking to them in the grocery store, at work, anywhere I met people.
But we all do that. And I'm a little concerned that you're too concerned about how they view you. People who are challenging you on your views are doing it because they can. You know, they're doing it to change your opinion, not for allow you
yeah.
to change theirs. The point is, you just have to keep talking, and I think we can agree on that. But I'm not so concerned about whether somebody keeps telling me that I'm pro-abortion. I just
well,
write
unfortunately,
that
there was a slate card that was giving out in some of the churches here in Brevard County. I'm not sure if you know Brevard County, Florida. Here, it's pretty. I mean, we have a very
I'm
hard time election.
Sure.
And they were giving out slate cards. They were giving out slate cards and writing on there what they thought our beliefs were. And I did not answer the question when I was asked whether I was pro-life or pro-choice. And I was shocked at how many people told me that they found that out in a church. And I said, well, how can that be? Why are they doing this? But it seems as though, unfortunately, they use the church as a base to bash certain candidates that don't conform to their ideas. And it is
all
very, very
all
sad.
Do. It's not. That's not
they
new.
Always
it's have. Always been that way.
I don't
which
like
is
it.
Why we have the Christian right. It's been that way for decades. But you just had a president who just this week embraced Planned Parenthood and say, we're not going to give up. what my suggestion is, don't get caught up in the minutiae. Don't get caught up in the individual who's having the conversation with you. Realize that the country is moving forward. We are becoming a more progressive nation. And the conservative voice that is so getting you focused on how do we change our message is actually a minority. I mean, look at the world around you and see how we're changing as far as gay rights, as seeing immigration and everything else. Stay focused on the bigger picture.
Yeah, let's turn to immigration while we have some time left. Only because I think it's such an important issue, and I think that it's in keeping with everything we've been talking about. Brian, are you still with us? We haven't heard from you. Do you have a thought here? I mean, with the immigration bill coming up and how this would play into Rubio and his plans, or any thoughts at all?
He's signed out.
Okay. Well, Lewis, you're at the forefront of this. Tell us your thoughts on the immigration.
Yes, I think that when we're talking about immigration, just about all these issues that keep popping up, essentially what we have is Democrats pushing an agenda on one side, and they're trying to work something on the immigration issue. On the other hand, you have the Republicans pushing back because they really don't mean it. They don't want it. They don't care for it. The only one thing that they want to do right now, Marco Rubio and his associates, is to provide constant cheap labor for agribusiness. And that's what they have signed on to. And they have this new blue card and W visa that really, creates new indentured servants for a number of corporations. They don't really mean to change anything, and Democrats keep falling into these traps, one right after the other. You know, they don't think, they just simply want a grand bargain. And if anybody has studied American history, and you look back at our great compromises, well, the three-fifths compromise. Then you have the Mason-Dixon compromise. You know, the 1820 compromise, and you have all these things. And all they did was shackle people, and then leave it for later on until we have the Civil War. You see, and so what is happening here? And we've been looking at it, and we've got a number of friends and allies working with us on this daily. It's essentially that we're getting an image, but there is there is this talk about a deal, and we're going to make a deal, but they refuse to come up front and say what really is behind it. And so far, the only thing that we really see is essentially that only about 12% of the immigrants will see a blue card to work in farms for minimum wage or less than minimum wage and essentially be tied to these folks. Then that leaves, other people out hanging in there and being asked to pay a minimum of $500 fine for having entered the country. How many of these people actually have the $500? It's not like they came here on vacation. And you keep going with those one after the other. There is this whole picture about we really don't mean it, which is what is going on. And once the Senate votes on it, absolutely no idea that the House is going to go for it because they're going to block it. That's what they have said. And as far as Marco Rubio goes, he's only looking at one person, and that is his own candidacy for the presidency, if Jeb Bush will let him, because that's the other monster that is running around. And notice that they're both talking about immigration, and neither one of them really means it. And
no,
we go back to... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they don't mean it. They're just going through the motions. And they hope that the media will take that out there. And then they say, oh, we tried. It didn't work. And that's how they mean to kill it. And that's how they dealt with the dreamers. That's how they dealt with violence against women. That's how they dealt one after the other. There is a pattern here that we can see. And, you know, to get one thing, you know, and I know you back to the conversation before, is, you know, two things in terms of politics. Never answer a question you don't want, you know, never give an answer you don't want to give. Just simply say what answer what you want to answer, first of all, you know, for political candidates. Second thing is, for political candidates, you don't go out there trying to convert the other side. You go out to get your own vote. Get your voters out. If you are a Democrat, then you want to get out the Democratic vote to come out for you. You're wasting your time arguing with Republicans and trying to get your vote.
But,
see,
Louis, in our county here in Brevard, we need to get at least 10 to 15% of the Republicans to vote for a Democrat. We had a great candidate, John Alvarez, that just lost because of his personal life. And they made sure that they got that out in a robocall, you know?
But how is
no.
candidate?
Go ahead.
He was, I mean, it's unfortunate, but there was someone from his opponent's side that was able to send out a robocall exploiting him and his sexual orientation. And that was pretty bad, but he would have won if he'd gotten 5% of the Republicans. And because he knew he had the Democratic vote.
But that's where we see the conceding, that we concede the issue.
You have to talk to them everywhere and anywhere. I mean, I take the opportunity to speak to them.
I'm sorry, Sita. You cannot win by conceding the issues. It's like every time I see a candidate enter a debate and I see their faces during the debate agreeing with their opponent. Why on earth will anybody vote for them if they're agreeing for their opponent? You see, that's the problem we see.
Well, I got a lot of my neighbors to vote for the president, and they're big-time Republicans. Just speaking to them, I got a lot of people to vote for him. I mean, told me they did. I'm not sure if they did. But I'm just saying, sometimes it's the way you speak to people. It's not what you say. It's how you say it. And people don't want you to always be upset and angry and far-left-leaning. They want you to be reasonable and speak to them about an issue that affects their family. Maybe their grandmother is in the nursing home on Medicare. Maybe they've got children on Medicaid. And you say to them, well, this is what the Democrats fought for. This is how we're going about it.
Okay,
and I've found that I've got a lot more people
you.
To listen that way.
I hear you saying this constantly, talking to the Republicans. Were you talking with the Democrats? Were you talking to your base? Did the Democratic Executive Committee come to your help in that county?
I was a delegate for the president. We have candidates in that area.
Let's bring Susan and Gwen in on this immigration issue. Do you have any thoughts you want to share with us?
Well, this is Susan, and, you know, the immigration issue is very important here. I'm working with a group called Unidos Now. And the great thing about that is it started about 2 years ago with, I would say, about a handful of people, and it's now grown into several hundred people that are constantly keeping the issue of immigration in the news. I mean, I think a large part of the immigration issue or problem is people's perception of what immigration is. I posted on Facebook just yesterday of how we always tend to think of immigration as far as Mexico goes, but you know, the same people that are crossing the borders are doing it by airplanes. They're doing it by cars. They're from Canada. They're from England. They're from Germany. They're from Ireland. They're from Japan. They're coming over for a myriad of reasons, and then they're staying. And a large part of the reason is we never take a look at the system that takes on average of anywhere, a low end, 5 years to be granted citizenship and 10 years, which seems to be more of the average that I'm hearing. And, you know, we're always concerned
with what's happening, you know, always down south. And yet now that we had what happened in Boston, everybody's screaming about immigration then because they were newly granted citizens within the past 10 years. And I think we get, you know, it's kind of what we've all been talking about here. It's the messaging. And we allow misinformation to become the message. And we allow our fears to take hold and become what we're disputing. And, you know, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the immigration reform that's being put by Rubio and his crew. But at least it's a step forward.
Gwen? Everybody seems so sorry. That's really pretty good, Susan.
Susan, I am an immigrant myself.
Excuse me. Just one second. I just want to make one small point, and then you guys can talk about that one. But everybody is so concerned about keeping people out of this country and overlooks the fact that we are losing all of these wonderfully talented, gifted people who come over here for one reason or another, usually for an education, but oftentimes to do contract work here for a couple of years with a company. We lose these people because of the way the country has become so immigration locked down, and also another reason is because of all the fear and hate mongering that has recently become so prevalent in our society and culture through our means of media. And people really don't like that. The actual experience with human beings in towns and cities and on the street is a lot different for people. Keep themselves isolated oftentimes to media because they're so busy with their confined jobs. And we're losing a lot of very, very talented, good people because of all of this. I think that side of it should always be looked at, too.
That's a very good point, Gwen. And unfortunately, that's a message that gets lost in all this hate mongering that you spoke of. Brian, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, we're talking about immigration, and was wondering if you wanted to weigh in with your thoughts on what's going on.
I think both parties have been pretty harsh on it. What Obama's put forward has low-income workers that are illegal immigrants having to pay off back taxes and fines as they're on the so-called path to citizenship. And they're not really in financial positions to do so. So it's sort of, it's allowing illegal immigrants in this country to work jobs that pretty much no one wants to, a miserable slaughterhouse job or picking tomatoes or something. And it'll basically keep status quo. And from the very far right, we heard Romney had in mind self-deportation, where basically the cops harass a person to the point where they want to leave the country. So self-deportation. So I mean that's the range of options that have been discussed from the left to the right in our political system. I would say that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah.
I'm an immigrant myself. As you know, I came to this country at the age of 18, and I experienced a lot of domestic violence of my first husband, and I ended up leaving him. I am one of 18. I have 17 siblings. And I have to say that most people who come to America, they come for a better life. They come for an opportunity. They want to be part of the fabric of this society and give back. But the bigger question is, our countries that we were born in, those countries need to, somehow or the other, we need to get education out in those countries as well, which is great now that it's happening. But a lot of people, if given that opportunity where they were born to be a part of their society, where goods and services affordable, and medical care is affordable, and, you know, women are getting birth control, and family planning is available, and people are not shoving religion down people's throats all the time and things like that, it would help. So, again, it always comes back to communication and education. Because I know for a fact my mom couldn't raise 18 children, but her religion says that, you know, she needed to give birth to these children. There was no places that she can go take care of herself if she didn't want a child. So, you know, it comes back to culture and education and where you're born, and the governments of those countries have to work together not to be corrupted as well. So immigration is a bigger picture than just people coming to America to pick tomatoes and work in the slaughterhouses and all that. People sometimes come for all different reasons. And I know if given the opportunity now, with what I know now, I probably would not have immigrated because I want to make a difference wherever I live. But as an 18-year-old child, you don't really know the difference. You do what your parents tell you to do, or you do what you think you want to do at that time. So I really feel the world has to come together for education.
It's a very good point, Sita. I want to take a different tact right now and bring in health care. It's been such a big issue, and, you know, right now we're looking at the state turning down federal money and concerns that the federal government isn't going to fulfill its commitments. Any thoughts, comments that anybody wants to make? Gwen, what do you have any thoughts on the healthcare situation? Gwen, are you there? Okay, Susan?
Well, you know, that's okay. I'm still waiting for everything to roll out, and, you know, I think this game that our governor is playing back and forth of whether he'll allow it to expand, whether he won't, whether he'll accept federal funding, he won't, is rather interesting. But I just think it's too early to say anything at this point.
Do you think that that our governor's holding back as well, or is he using this as a political tool to protect himself? Somebody mentioned earlier about Rick Scott being fearful of being primaried himself.
Well, I can guarantee you he is fearful of being primaried, and now initially he was to the far right. He has definitely moved closer. He's become bigger on education. He's become bigger on health care, and he's concerned that the state has moved more to the center, and he wants to be reelected. So, but listen, I do have to tell you, I have to get going, and I just wanted to say thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Susan. I'm so glad to have had the opportunity to chat with you, and I hope we have a chance again in the real near future. But thank you so much for all your contributions.
Absolutely. And
okay.
Everyone else, it was good listening.
Okay. Bye-bye, Susan.
Bye-bye,
Susan.
Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye-bye.
Lewis, yes. Do you have any thoughts on the health care situation?
Yeah,
what's
on
going
the issue
on?
Of, yeah, on the issue of health care, you have several points coming across. One of them is that you have a legislature which is further to the right than the governor himself, who cannot be further to the right anyway. So what they have is this political game of good cop, bad cop. And the governor says one thing, I want to do this, such as the $2,500 pay raise for the teachers, which he really did not mean to do that, because he had already taken money out of education for that, and teachers had been thrown out of their jobs right and left for the longest period of time. So now he comes up with this idea of doing that. And then Tallahassee says, no, we are not going to give the teachers $2,500 extra a year. What we're going to do is give the teachers a pay raise under merit pay. But the merit pay is not necessarily going to teachers alone, which means it can go to administrators and so on. In other words, forget about it. You're not going to get it. And the other one thing is playing games with the teachers in the classroom. Once we have promised you this, now we're going to go back to the merit teachers. And the merit teachers has always been a political game played in every county. You see, with all those, with the teachers, and they used to take an exam before. I don't know what, and I used to be a teacher in the state educational system many years ago until I retired from the University of Florida and from Santa Fe College. And you know, I saw that going back and forth, but they really didn't mean to give the teachers a pay raise. I still remember when they said, we're going to raise a tax to give teachers a pay raise, a penny for the sales tax. Never happened. Then they came up with the lottery, and then the lottery went another way. So the legislatures in the last 17 years, and this is what people don't remember, 17 years since the Republicans took over the legislature in Tallahassee. It was in 1998 when they took the governorship. Now, one out of every four Floridians lives on the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and this is not getting out there, and people don't realize. Nobody is better. These people have been playing all these games back and forth all this time, these times. And Governor Rick Scott is doing the same thing. This is an individual who made his money out of a health industry.
And defrauding that.
Exactly, Columbia. The Columbia Corporation, the enterprise. And now he's behind the emergency. Well, not him directly, because it goes back to his wife. And now these are all these emergency care units throughout the state, in every county, in every city that they can get into. So whenever he's passing all these laws and doing all these things, there is something extra behind it. And I have yet to see somebody challenge that. And obviously, the Florida newspapers, they cannot do a better job of, you know, hailing the King Scott, as we call him, because making him like he's the victim of the legislature now, while the legislature is trying to do the right thing. Excuse me? We're playing games here, back and forth. I just want a Democratic Party that comes out and says it like it is. Don't give me a press release. That is not working. Press releases don't work. Organize. Get people out there. You know, keep moving and shaking. That's what I want to see happen. But, you know, going back to this whole thing, they're playing games with the Obamacare. You know, the governor said, before he said he didn't want it, then he said, I want it. And then it's up to the legislature. It's a con game.
It is.
Back and forth.
Yeah. Sita, this is obviously a very important issue for you as it relates specifically to women and families, you know, the whole bundle of health care and education. What are your thoughts on what's going on right now?
Well, of course, I'm also a nurse, and I do see a lot of waste in Medicare. I think the president is right when he says we have to rein in the cost. I tend to think of healthcare as a holistic approach. You know, if you're stressed out, you're suffering enough money, of course your health is not going to be wholesome. So when we talk about healthcare, it's a whole thing. It's the way we eat. It's what we teach our children. It's exercise. It's not just a physical part. It's a mental part as well. And I think that what they call Obamacare, I like to call it Obamacares, I think it's great, and I would hope the governor would accept that federal money, because I work with girls that make $10 an hour, and I don't see how they can put gas in their car, pay for health insurance, send their children to a decent school, they need people like us to fight for health care for them and education and teach them, you know, how to de-stress, how to get others to show compassion for them. And I feel personally that we should have universal health care, but that's a different show and a different topic.
Right.
Because it's totally unfair to how one life could be so valuable and have so much, and one life, a mother, is making $10 an hour and struggling, or maybe less, to put gas in her car to get to work the next day. And then if she gets sick, she doesn't have the $15 to pay the copayment for the medication. So I talk to people all day long with the radio show, with nursing, with the nursing home. My husband is a practicing physician. We see a lot of people in his offices. And I have to say, not everybody out there can afford what they need to have a life that's a happy, healthy life. You know, so I look at it as a different approach. I look at it as a holistic thing, that it has to come from all of us. You know, we all have to help each other, to teach each other how to eat right, everything like that, in order to be healthy.
Well, you know, we live in a society where we don't take care of those who are less well off, who are in poverty. We throw people out of work with very little support, without any health care. And, of course, as a result, we're going to have some of the highest health care costs in the world because we don't take care of the bottom. And, you know, when you throw people out of work, heart disease goes up, cancer rates go up, hypertension goes up, depression goes up, and all that feeds into our ever-escalating health costs in our health care system.
And
so,
you also,
you know,
have
it is
people
a holistic
that don't
approach.
Well, you also have people that take no responsibility for their lives whatsoever. I've heard of and seen people that, you know, they will come to see the physician and they've got a disease and they're told to take this many pills for so many days and they don't. They go home, they're feeling better, they stop taking it. Or the doctor will tell them, in order for you to feel better and for your diabetes to get better or hypertension, you have to lose a little weight. They don't. He tells them to drink water every day, walk a moderate 20 minutes a day. All these things are free, drinking water, walking. People want a quick fix to health care, and unfortunately there isn't.
Yeah.
You are
those
what you
are
eat.
Those are the biggest source of cost for health care. I mean, there's a good reason why other modern industrialized nations have socialized their health care, and they have half the cost we do, and they cover their entire populations, which is something we do not do.
Because
they do
take
not have, they do not have health insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, and hospital management companies that publicly trade and are forced and continuously growing their profits. That's the cost. If
you take a slice out of our health care dollars to operate.
That cost.
I kid
right.
you not, I have patients who are in their 80s where I work that are on 15 to 20 pills a day, and each one of those pills have a side effect. The people that makes the biggest profit out of healthcare are the pharmaceutical companies, and a lot of those people, honestly, I personally, I've been a long-term care nurse for over 25 years, and I won't say the drug names publicly, but there are so many drugs that they put these elderly people on. And, of course, the doctors are practicing defensive medicine because they're afraid of lawsuits if they don't treat a diagnosis. But a lot of these meds, I've yet to see one dementia pill that we give out every single day bring back somebody's memory. I mean, it's really sad that the pharmaceutical companies make such a profit off of the elderly. So,
well,
I mean,
that's going to have to be for
thing,
another
you know?
Show. We're running out of time here, and I think we could probably do a whole show on just that very point, Sita, because it's a huge, huge issue. And
it
I don't mean to cut you off, but we are at the end here. And before we go, I wanted to thank everybody for joining us. I want to give you one last opportunity to tell us how we can find you, how our audience can find you, your websites, and find out more about the good work that you're all doing. Brian, tell us real quick how we can find you. Okay, Sita.
You can find my book. It's called 18 Brothers and Sisters. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. And it's an inspirational message of the power of sacrifices, mentors, education, and training to make a difference. It talks about my mother's belief in faith and everything else that she used to raise her children. And then, of course, my radio show is on AM 1300 WMEL every Monday from 12 to 1. And my website is Cedar Media, Inc. And I just want to say I keep enjoying every day on God's planet. It's a life's a vacation.
Amen. Lewis?
Now, yes, you can contact us at progressivepush.org. You can write us directly, info@progressivepush.org. We're also on Twitter, at Progressive Push, and so and you can follow us there. And we have several Facebook groups, including Florida Progressive Push, Progressive Push, Arkansas Progressive Push, California Progressive Push, and so on. If you want to contact us, feel free to do that, or you can write me directly at Luis, L-U-I-S, at progressivepush.org. And thank you very much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Have I missed anybody? Okay, well, thank
you. Okay, I'm signing up. Thank you.
Let me say something. Sorry. Basically, our show is Progress Toward Democracy, Monday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Time with Ruth Ann Armarte Fio. Tomorrow night, our guest is Antonio Yuhas. Are you still there?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. And Facebook page, Progress Toward Democracy.
Thank you, Brian.
I just wanted to add, I hope Rick feels better. This is Gwen. I hope Rick feels better.
And
well,
you were great.
Well,
thank you. I mean, this is baptism by fire for me. So, hopefully Rick will have me back on. But, yes, I'm looking forward to him getting better.
I apologize. I'm using a new phone, and I didn't realize I was talking with the mute button still on.
No problem.
That's why there was some.
No, you did very good. You did very well.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody. And I look forward to hearing from all of you again and another show by Rick.
Great.
Take care.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Take care.
Want to change the world? There's nothing to it. Nothing to it. There is no life like the world of pure imagination. Living down, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. If you truly wish to be. If you truly wish to be. If you truly wish to be.
Good night, and thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. This is Rick Spezak, news director, wishing you a good evening. And remember, there is a better world coming. Thanks so much. Take care.